Check it, bro. I'm surfing with Fuse's new unbreakable glass bottle, bro.
That's actually Fuse's new plastic bottle, and there's a drink inside, bro. Fuse, vitamin and mineral-enhanced beverages infused with quality ingredients and exceptional taste. And now with its new plastic bottle, Healthy just got portable.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to the BS Report. Special doubleheader this week. We had Adam Carolla on earlier in the week, and we haven't talked to my buddy Jacko in a while. Not just about the Yanks and the Red Sox, but I went to Vegas with him 2 weekends ago, so we wanted to recap the weekend a little bit and then talk a little baseball. So let's give him a call right now at work for America's favorite running segment. Johnny, are you worried yet?
Complex Litigation, this is John.
Johnny.
Hey, what's up?
What's going on?
Not too much. What's up with you?
Well, I always call for the podcast when the Yankees aren't doing well and the Red Sox are doing well. So I thought I'd flip it around this time.
I see a little reversal.
Yeah, I think out of fairness to you, to the Yankee fans.
You're gonna jinx us and end our 4-game winning streak. Is that the plan here?
No, I didn't even know. Four-game winning streak, really?
Really, yeah.
Four-game winning streak?
Yeah, I'm afraid so, yeah.
Really? I had no idea.
This ragtag bunch of underdogs, I'll tell you.
Who's the starting rotation?
You have Cy Young candidate Mike Mussina.
Wow.
Probable Cy Young runner-up Andy Pettit. I guess he can't really qualify for Rookie of the Year, but phenomenal future number one starter, Jabba Chamberlain.
He has been pretty good.
Wily veteran Sidney Ponson, and the young upstart Darryl Rasner.
I don't know if I would have used Wily.
You know,
for Sidney. Wait a second. He got waived from Texas,
right?
Because allegedly he had some drinking problems.
Exactly. Yeah.
So now he doesn't have a drinking problem.
Well, there's not that many bars or anything to do in Manhattan, so it's a good place for him. He's kept it. I don't know. He's kept it under wraps.
What happened to that dude, Dan Geese? Or Geese?
What was his name?
Dan Geese.
It was spelled Geese, but pronounced Geese.
Yeah.
He was sent back down, I believe. He wasn't really doing it for us.
So you're feeling pretty good because you're about to get the Bobby Abreu second half surge. Damon's coming back. You finally got Posada's corpse out of the lineup. Anybody?
Feeling good is a little strong. I don't know. I feel a little scrappy. Like I have hope, and I probably shouldn't. Like if you look at them on paper, I should have no hope because I mean they're riddled with injuries. They're going to lose Posada for the year. They're going to probably lose Matsui for the year.
But you said Matsui is terrible, though.
Yeah, I know, but he's an upgrade over Brett Gardner, though.
Yeah. Well, we were together in Las Vegas about 10 or 12 days ago, and I happened to be with you when the news ticker broke that the Yankees. We're interested in Richie Saxon and
the final piece of the puzzle, as we call it.
You flipped out. Say it was an expletive laden barrage, it would be an understatement.
It's true, yeah. I mean,
now Richie's on the team, make his case.
Well, his numbers against lefties are pretty good, actually. Not awful. He's an upgrade coming off the bench over Chad Moeller and the aforementioned Brett Gardner, Justin Christian. So in that sense, I mean, they're getting him for $10, basically. So it's really like a nothing-to-lose proposition. I mean, they're only going to use him against lefties, which his numbers, again, are not bad. And, you know, he still maybe has a little pop left. I'm doing my best to talk myself into Richie Saxon.
Wow.
It's not possible.
You've come a long way in 12 days.
As somebody said a while ago on the radio, or I read somewhere that, you know, years ago, not that long ago, the Yankees could bring guys like Tim Raines and Daryl Strawberry off the bench. And now lately in crucial pinch hitting situations, you're relying on like Chad Moeller and untested rookies.
Right.
So in that sense, Richie Saxon at least is, you know, he's a major league player. He's been around. Potential to hit it out of the park with any swing. So, you know.
I can't believe you guys are still, like, lingering after the Ian Kennedy, Phil Hughes debacle.
Exactly.
Like, you get nothing from those two guys and still be kind of hanging around. It's
and
crazy.
To lose Wong, who's their number one starter.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
I mean, if any other team would be completely buried and out of it, so the fact that they're even, like, hanging around lurking is, like, I mean, I see Buster Olney on Mike and Mike in the Morning yesterday, and he's like, oh, the Yankees just won 3 games in a row, and he, like, completely discounted their chances. Like, there's just no hope. Meanwhile,
wow.
They go out and beat the hell out of the Twins last night. So, please, please, everybody, keep counting them out. Please be in love with the Red Sox, as everyone always is. So
well, neither of us are sold on Tampa because...
Yeah,
now, those guys have been there, and they don't win on the road, and for all the reasons everybody else has said.
Right.
And then if Ortiz comes back, I do think, I think his absence has actually been very underrated, because I have some Red Sox fan friends who are doing the sky is falling routine, and,
right.
You know, Ortiz was the best hitter on the team. We haven't had him for like 2 months.
Right.
And he's also one of those guys that when you're leading 3-2 in the seventh inning, he hits the homer to push the game out of reach. Like, we don't have anybody hitting those homers.
Not to mention he's like the most clutch hitter in baseball.
And he's the most clutch hitter not on just the team, but in baseball. So
right.
To think that he wouldn't have swung like 5, 6, 7 of these games over the last 2 months is crazy
right.
to me.
And you're still right around first place, so.
Yeah, and also like Lester's really turned into a monster.
Huge.
He was unbelievable last night. Granted, it was Seattle.
Right.
But I think he's a borderline number one starter on a playoff team now.
I'll go farther than that. I think he's been better than Beckett this year.
Well, he has. But Beckett, Beckett's Beckett. In the postseason, he's going to be the number one guy.
Right.
Dice has been kind of...
He's an enigma.
The stats are a little deceiving. I'll leave it at that. But I think Lester's been the most reliable guy. Like, I really felt like he was going to stop the winning streak. I'm not in the sky is falling camp with the Red Sox.
No.
But I do. The thing that worries me is I know Ortiz is hitting these homers in the minors, but I always worry about hand and wrist injuries. I don't like them with my hitters. I don't like hands and wrists since those are the two most important part of a swing.
I love the fact that they were like they hyped it up about like 3 games in a row and 3 home runs, really in Triple A, really. I should really take that to the bank, you know.
Do you buy the Angels at all? Because I just watched them sweep the Red Sox.
No,
this weekend, and they actually, I have to say, had a little swagger to them.
I never believe that the Angels will beat the Red Sox in a crucial situation. They'll slaughter the Yankees, but I never believe ever that they would ever step to the plate in the postseason and beat the Red Sox. It's all well and good to do that in July, but when push came to shove in October, they can have all the rally monkeys they want, and they're not beating the Red Sox. They're just not.
Well, they
I want
did,
them to. I wish they would, but they just won't.
I am worried about their offense a little bit, because it took them 3 months, but they finally put Juan Rivera in over Matthews, who was just, done. And Howie Kendrick's starting to hit.
They need one more bat, though.
I know, but they have the money to go get it, though.
Yeah, but will they? They never pulled the trigger on anything big.
Well, I think this year, though, they should. This is the year, you look at the landscape, and they won in, 2002?
Yeah.
They this is as good of a chance as they had in 2002.
Right. Yeah, they should, and that owner is aggressive, maybe, but he allegedly is aggressive, but I mean...
Did you see him on the Costa show?
No.
Costas had a town hall on baseball that was actually really good, in my opinion.
Really?
And in one of the segments, they had Artie Moreno on. Not what I expected. I thought he would be this charismatic, whatever. The interesting part in that Costa show is the last segment they have Mays and Aaron on.
Mays and Aaron?
Yeah, it was pretty good. And Bob Gibson's in the stands.
Really?
And, I thought it was a great show.
Costas
I thought
has connections with all those baseball guys, so he can get all those guys on, you know?
He got a Bud Selig interview.
Really?
They talked for 10 minutes about the game. And, I thought it was good. I like that whole town hall concept. Billy Crystal was in the stands.
Fantastic. Yankee, super Yankee fan.
But it was interesting to see Mays and Aaron together. And
Is there bitterness between those two, or do they get along, Mays and Aaron?
They seem like they got along, but, deep down, I got the feeling Mays was like, this guy cool. Because at one point, Mays casually mentioned in the conversation how he missed the 52 and 53 seasons because of war service.
Yeah, he was drafted, right.
And he's like, Hank got 715, but I missed in 50. I didn't play in 52 and 53. And Costas was like, yeah, that would have been 30 homers each season. And you could kind of see Hank was like, you want to start this, Willie? You want this? So that was kind of interesting. And everybody forgets about that, the Willie Mays War Service.
That's right, because he would have shattered that record well before Aaron did.
I think both of those guys, well, both of those guys, I think, are secretly bitter that they didn't have steroids back then.
Of course, because they were looking at about 900.
Yeah, Hank Aaron's like, I would have had 1,000 homers.
That's right.
But yeah, it was pretty good. I like those Costas shows. All right, let's talk about our Las Vegas trip.
Our Odyssey, yes.
We had a 4-day bachelor party for our friend's house.
That's right.
You guys flew in on a Wednesday night.
Mm-hmm. Into L.A.
Into L.A., and then we did the drive on Thursday.
That's right.
L.A. to Vegas drive. What were your thoughts on the drive?
I was kind of dreading the drive. I just thought, like, it's going to be 150 degrees in 4 hours and in a cramped car, and it just had the potential to be miserable. But it was really fun. It was good male bonding. There was good comedy.
We had the Sirius. We listened to the Playboy Channel.
The
sex advice show on the Playboy Channel.
I learned some things on the way. That was good. Some things I didn't know about. That was enlightening, eye opening. It was good.
The first question we heard was from a guy who referenced really the grossest possible act one human being could do to another, and
That's
said
right.
that they had done it 3 times, and he was kind of tired of it.
Well, he was into it in the beginning, but now that it was pushing up into the 20s, and it was like every time he was
now
a little troubled by it.
And now it's been 25 times, and I'm over it. And so that really got the ride. That pushed the ride to the next level, I think, as did Arby's.
Absolutely. Yeah, that really did. There was about 40 miles of silence while we just all three of us locked into the radio listening to this.
So then we stayed at the Venetian.
We did. Beautiful facility.
Yeah, you know, the Venetian... I don't know. I don't want to say it was overrated, but the Venetian was a hot spot, and then kind of these other casinos started building their own versions of the Venetian, like Mandalay had the hotel, mm-hmm. and the Palms had the Playboy Suites, and Caesars built the Augustus Tower, and the Venetian kind of got lost in the shuffle, but then you stay there, and the suites were fantastic.
Very nice.
And also, we liked
the living room. It was nice.
Yeah, it had the little step down, and also you had the food court.
Food court was great, yes.
Food court was good in the second floor, and unfortunately, we didn't have a lot of luck at the Venetian.
No, we did not. No, the Venetian will be building another wing now, thanks to me, so that'll be good. They can really expand now.
Yeah, that was your first extended gambling trip, and by Saturday night, you were like Dan Geese.
I was. They were sending me back down to the minors, that's for sure. Yeah, I was William H. Macy, I'm going to be William H. Macy in the cooler, too.
The last time I saw you in a gambling thing, you were like slumped against the wall with House's two brothers. We were calling you the usual suspects.
That's exactly what we looked like.
You're just, all of you were basically had reached your gambling limit, but it was only like 12:30.
Yeah, pretty much.
And we were just like, hey guys, we'll see you back at the Venetian.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
We just went up to the bar and had a drink. Yeah.
In one of my old columns, I compared that to, that phenomenon to the third guy in a porn movie. In a scene where it can only be, the only really two guys can be involved, so the third guy just kind of has to stand off and wait his turn. And,
right.
And you guys were out of the third man in the porn movie for like about an hour.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, we killed you right there.
But you missed our dramatic rally, though.
I did, yeah. I didn't stick around for that. Gambling's not the best spectator sport in the world.
No, it's really not. No.
Somehow
no,
people have been able to make poker into a spectator sport, but blackjack doesn't quite have the same competitive zeal to it. You know. The
yeah, that's why I don't like watching poker either. I don't like watching other people gamble.
Yeah, it's just not that fun. Much fun. Right.
Well, you missed. We had a big comeback, and what really started it was this dealer that we were doing pretty well. We were playing at the Palms, which actually was surprisingly good.
It was fun.
And we had a dealer who we were doing pretty well with, and about a half hour into it, we realized his name on his little tag was Drago.
That's right.
Now, so I'm like, do I leave? Like, is it a good sign that this guy's named Drago? Is it a bad sign? I just know something's going to happen and it's going to be memorable. I don't know whether good or bad. And, as it turned out, very good. Drago
did well for you. He did not break you.
And you know what the key was? I never, ever, ever made a Drago reference or joke because I felt like he'd probably heard it a million times and it probably at some point pushed him over the top. So when he heard it, he got mad and I didn't want to change the karma at the table. So I held off and I was dying to do the Stallone in the Mountain Drago scream, but I held off. I just never did it. table treated us great. And then by the time I had made enough money back to do the Drago scream, he was gone because they were trying to ice us with one of the dealers that casinos tend to try to ice hot tables with. I'll leave it at that. But you know when it's happening, believe me.
Unfortunately, so, Drago treated me like Carl Weathers, Apollo Creed.
Yeah, we
I didn't have time to make a Drago reference. So I had to go stand by the wall with the House Brothers.
Yeah, we had a 5:30 night, and as we were leaving, it was daylight, and the people in the cab line were either going to another casino to hook up, or they were hookers who had just been in somebody's room. And that's really when you know you've had a magical Vegas night.
That's really. Yeah.
What were the other moments you'll remember?
Well, certainly the Playboy Club.
Oh yeah, Playboy Club. Yeah, that was interesting.
We went to the Playboy Club. That was exciting.
And then we went to
the Palms.
Yes. And then we went to a gentleman's establishment. That was also interesting.
That we did too, which was a little bit like being in Africa and being a gazelle surrounded by hungry lions.
Yeah, you and I ended up cramming ourselves by the table.
That's right.
I like to build. I always like to either find a corner, and then I call it the chair armada. Put the chairs around so the ladies working in the establishment. They'd really have to vault over the chairs to get to you.
That's right.
But we crammed ourselves right by the stage.
Yes.
And I'll tell you, I haven't been in a strip joint in like 3 years. The number of tattoos I was shocked by.
It was bracing. It was troubling.
The strippers in general already are not like, they're not Mrs. Cleaver. Put it that way.
No.
And we know that going in. They're right on the edge.
Right.
And you can kind of do with that information what you will. But the tattoos...
takes it to a whole nother level.
Yeah, when your back is covered in tattoos and you're dancing on a stage, like, I don't know. I was having flashbacks to Brianna in that Real World season.
Yeah. It was troubling a little bit. It was more than a little troubling. You know, we were sitting there and you and I were talking or joking about something. And remember one of them that looked like Serena Williams came over and yelled at us.
Oh yeah, that we weren't
her show. We weren't paying enough attention to her.
Demanded dollars. Yeah, it's right. A different era.
They're aggressive.
I think I'm out.
Yeah, it's just you had to do it for House's thing, but you know, I'm not a huge fan either.
Once I had a daughter, it kind of tainted me on the whole thing because I always go into those places thinking that each girl in there has a dad, and the dad let them down in some way.
Absolutely.
And the writer side of me just becomes obsessed with that, and then anybody I see, I'm like, I wonder what happened to her. I wonder why she's here. And I think I'm getting old.
Yeah, that's probably a sure sign, right? You'd rather spend time with Drago than with semi-nude women, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the way it works. That is a sign that you're getting old. It's true.
The other thing we had a lunch at Wolfgang Puck's.
We did, yeah.
The Venetian, which was one of the 40 restaurants he has in Vegas, and you asked the waitress if she could send Wolfgang over the table so you can congratulate him on the meal. I thought that was funny.
For the price of my roast beef sandwich, Wolfgang should have been there. Let me tell
you. He should have. Right. It was a little pricey.
We went to
Summer League all day on Friday.
That's right. OJ Mayo.
Yeah, we saw the O.J. Mayo. We saw him dunk over Hilton Armstrong, and it was one of those dunks where it was kind of a reverse field fast break. O.J. got the ball at half court, and he was going for the dunk, but you could see Hilton Armstrong, who's like 6'11", running parallel to him. And it was kind of like, is he going to try to dunk on him? And then he did it, and it really almost caused a riot.
Well, the best part was that guys had been heckling OJ the whole game, chanting overrated, overrated. And then after he took off from just inside the foul line, basically, and dunked over a 7-foot guy, he then was fouled, like, strode defiantly over to the half court line to the section where the guys were heckling him.
Yeah.
And stared at them.
It was
saying,
great.
Like, as if to say, like, who's overrated now? And the whole crowd erupted in an ovation.
Yeah, it was already like a borderline riot, and then that happened, and that whole section was just like rolling over each other.
Right.
It was great. Yeah, and the funny thing was, it was really only like two guys who were saying it.
Right.
But that place was so quiet because it's all like scouts and GMs and...
yeah, not a lot of cheering.
Like kids. Like we had a bunch of kids in our section who were there to get Lewis Amundsen's
former UNLV great, his autograph.
So
he had the autograph table after game one, yeah.
Yeah, he had the autograph table, which we made fun of for a good half hour.
Right.
But But so when somebody says overrated at Summer League, it's like piercing. It's
yeah,
awkward.
It's really loud.
Yeah, everybody just kind of cringes. So when he did that, I thought he handled it the right way too.
Oh yeah, he didn't go over the top or really.
Yeah, he didn't like pound his chest
or anything.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
The fact that he's been a professional basketball player since he's 11, that's a factor. I mean, he's ready to play, you know?
When you're in your late 20s, you know how to handle those situations.
That's right.
So we stayed there for like 3 games. Unfortunately, yeah. the mistake we made, I think, with Summer League was going at the beginning of the week when none of the players knew each other because it was very choppy.
But we wanted to go see O.J. Mayo's first game. I mean, it was
yeah, that was cool, I guess.
And we wanted to see that, but... Some of the other players, you know, got to be doing my taxes next year. We'll be playing in the NBA, but yeah, it was fun.
We saw a couple.
Good old knees court.
We saw a few of them, out.
Yeah, we
late
did
night too, which is kind of funny. I won't mention any names, but
no,
let's just say we saw one guy who had like a 1 o'clock game the next day at the Palms at like 3 a.m.
Well, we saw some other full-fledged NBA players and GMs and such out in Vegas. So that was a good time to go, you know?
Yeah, that was one of my underrated highlights of the weekend is when at the Venetian and Kiki Vandeweghe, the elevator stopped and Kiki Vandeweghe got in and House and I were just like...
Yeah.
And I knew House wanted to make the Tish Gavili joke. I knew it was sitting there for him. And I was waiting for him to whisper it, but he never did. And the reason he never did was because Kiki Vandeweghe is like 6'9".
Yeah, he's a tall fella.
He would have killed us.
That's right.
I think it would have been more fun if it was Chris Wallace.
Yeah, though. Then
it was our size. If it got ugly, I think he'd at least be able to get a couple licks in. But Kiki Vandeweghe, gigantic, scary.
One of my bigger regrets is when we saw Marcus Camby in the Venetian one night that I didn't go up to him and talk about growing up on the mean streets of Hartford.
Yeah, you should have. And how your campaign to become the new mayor.
That's right. I could have got a picture with Camby, local celebrity. That would have been huge for me. That was a big regret.
The other good thing was we watched a lot of hungover TV.
We did.
Including somebody that, you know, I don't even know how to adequately describe. Why don't you do it?
The Steve Wilkos show?
Yes, the Steve Wilkos show.
Yeah, one morning hungover we were flipping the channels and you were in control of the remote and you came upon the Steve Wilkos show and this was the first time either one of us had ever seen it. And Steve Wilkos is apparently the former, I guess, security guard or like...
No, he is. He's the guy...
Show. He was the big bald guy that would stop people from running after one another when they just determined that, you know, they weren't really the father of that baby or whatever.
He was the guy who looked like... Yeah, the guy who looked like Cal Ripken. Yeah.
And then some genius decided to give him his own show. So now he has his own show where he brings on these degenerates and they sit there and he just berates them. It's like a guy that's accused of molesting his stepchildren.
Yeah.
The guy has no defense and this guy just is in his face screaming at him until the degenerate decides he's had enough and he goes to leave. But then that wasn't enough for Steve Wilkos. You don't just leave the Steve Wilkos show. He follows you out and continues to scream at you the entire way out of the building.
It's like Jerry Springer going through roid rage or...
On crystal meth.
Or road or roid rage on crystal meth, yeah. He's insane.
Exactly. And then his apparently, like the show we watched was a montage of his finest moments, finest being all in the eye of the beholder apparently, but it was like a highlight show. And his tagline, I guess, is that he yells at you to get out of his seat because he owns the seat and you have to then stand up and then he grabs the seat and throws it at his own set.
Like Bobby Knight.
Yeah, he throws the seat and says, like, you don't deserve this seat.
Yeah, you're not worthy of my seat. You're not worthy of sitting on my stage and whips the chair. It is magnificent.
And you and I had a discussion as to why anybody would agree to appear on the Steve Wilkos show because it didn't appear that it's never like a happy ending for the guest.
Right.
Like, why if you're, like, in your trailer park and God knows where and you get a call, and like, hi, this is the producer of the Steve Wilkos show. We'd love to have you on as a guest. Like, you can't possibly think there's going to be, like, a happy conclusion. Like, you're going to out-debate him.
No, I think it goes even, it's even stranger than that. I think they run ads at the end of the show, like, are you a stepfather who's ever been accused of molesting your stepdaughter? Call the Steve Wilkos show now. We want you as a guest. And then these people call because I guess they want their, it's not even 15 minutes of fame, it's like 1 minute of fame. And they get a paycheck and they get flown first class to Chicago to be berated by a completely insane bald guy.
Yeah, I guess it's for the trip to Chicago or whatever and they put up in a hotel. like the joke I made when he has some child molester on and he's screaming at him, you molested your kids, and the guy's only defense is, you know what else I molested last night? The minibar. And you paid for it, Steve Wilco. Thanks. Yeah.
Well, none of them were convicted. It was all, like, accused.
It was all just conjecture.
So then, like, a lot of it, they involve a lie detector.
Yeah, but even the lie detector wasn't really definitive because he didn't say, like, this lie detector showed that you're lying. It was like, we did this lie detector, and you didn't like this question, but, like, if he had the goods on him, I think he would have thrown it at him or screamed it at him, you know?
Steve Wilco's like, you didn't like that question, did you? You didn't like it, did you? Screaming and spitting all over the guy.
I hope it was the result amazing. Of this podcast that we get invited on the Steve Wilco show and he berates us for degrading his show.
Yeah, I'd like to be invited on to talk about him berating us about discussing strippers in a positive light. You had a good time at the Olympic Gardens, didn't you?
You don't deserve that chair. Get up. Yeah.
Yeah, it was something. I predict the... I don't think 2008 is going to be his breakout year, but I think 2009 will be when he punches an accused rapist in the face and it turns into a big scandal.
Yeah, that's the next logical step from the screaming and the chair throwing. Like, there has to be some actual physical violence.
Well, one of these guys is going to have to try to take a swing at him, right?
You would think. But he's a big guy. They probably, they probably keep it to, like, smaller size degenerates.
You think that like nobody over 5'9"?
Like a guy comes out and he's like 6'3", 250, and they're like, no, we're not going to do this show today, no.
So that was one of the great shows we watched, and then we banged out season two of the Two Corys.
That's right. It was just fantastic.
That was at my house in L.A. on Sunday night.
Well, we started it in Vegas, and then on Sunday night we watched the latest episode.
Right.
And I'm actually really mad at myself because when I was back here in Connecticut on Sunday night, I forgot to watch this week's episode.
Oh, no.
I was watching the ESPYs, and I forgot to TiVo the Two Corys.
Hold that thought, because I want your thoughts on the ESPYs. But back to the Two Corys.
All right. Yes.
The best part about watching the show with you is that you have open mic night and you're just begging Corey Haim to kill himself. No matter what thing he says, you can spin it into kill yourself, Corey.
I think at this point it's the only logical decision for him. I mean, his career is never going to be good again. He's never going to be a star again.
No.
He has no other skills of any kind.
We're not poking fun at suicide. We're just pointing out that this is a guy who is really exhausted all of his life options.
I mean,
and obviously has really nothing that will he'll ever accomplish.
I mean, there's no coming back. America is not going to be going to like this big summer blockbuster next year just starring Corey Haim. It's just not happening.
Well, there is coming back. He can accept that he can never be a star anymore and, you know, get a job.
Right.
Then life is salvageable. Well, that's our favorite part. I had Carole on the podcast this week, and I was telling him about the opening credits. What does Feldman say?
He's like, when we were in the 80s and we were making movies, there was no stopping us.
Yeah. Dream a Little Dream, Lost Boys, there was no stopping us. And then we were like, well, the box office kind of held you back a little bit.
The movie going public seemed to put up a roadblock or two.
Studio executives were an obstacle.
Basic economics really caused you some problems.
Yeah, and the best part is like it's not like the two movies. It's not like Corey Feldman was Chaz Sheen in Wall Street.
Right.
You know, it's not like it's not like they were in Platoon together. Like they were in a good movie that was like a well respected 80s movie. It was Dream a Little Dream, Lost Boys. What was the other one they were in? Goonies.
License to Drive.
That's right. That was another one.
That was their Citizen Kane, I believe. That was a big.
Well, see, I always thought Blown Away was their finest movie. The Basic Instinct for the teenage demographic with Nicole Eggert and the Sharon Stone role and some phenomenal overacting by Corey Feldman.
And Corey Haim and Nicole Eggert, I think they had a little onset romance, didn't they?
They did. In fact, when Corey made the list for his assistant in one of the shows we watched.
Right.
All the people he needed to apologize for, which was so long that they had to cut away.
Right.
She was on the list.
She was. That's right.
Yeah. Sure. So, anyway, we recommend that show.
Yeah, the Two Corys. You can't get enough of it. Steve Wilco show and the Two Corys, really. Trainwreck TV at its finest.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's a nice segue, Johnny. The ESPYs, 2008. What were your thoughts?
Well, I kind of flipped. I was watching it intermittently, but I thought that... Well, Aaron Andrews in the pregame show, I thought, did some fantastic work all around.
Her interviewing was great.
I couldn't get enough of her on camera, let me tell you. And Justin, I'm going to say this, and this is going to sound really like I'm like a squealing teenage girl.
I'm going to defend you. I'm defended. I know what you're going to say, but go ahead.
Justin Timberlake is a phenomenally talented individual.
Yes, I agree.
Just phenomenally talented. I mean, you know, I was not really in the demographic or would never like NSYNC, but he did that dance around about all the different sports things and all the sports scandals and all the sports stories. I mean, he's freaking talented.
Yeah.
He's always great on Saturday Night Live. I thought even, like, the monologue part was funny. Like, the thing about, like, Memphis and he didn't want to talk about that and, like, hugging Aaron Rodgers and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I thought he was good.
Yeah, I turned the corner on him when he did the two Saturday Night Lives. I just thought he was great.
And yeah.
It's a hard show to host, and for somebody to be, like, that good, obviously they're talented.
And, you know, like, dancing around and singing and making it funny and poking fun at himself about the Janet Jackson thing. Like, I was just like, wow, Justin Timberlake. He just seems like a cool guy. Like, you know, people seem to like him, and it was good.
I had a lot of favorite moments. I went to it.
Yeah.
And I went to the parties after. But I also had some inside information on stuff, which, you know, like that John Carlos and Tommy Smith, they got the Arthur Ashe Award, and one of them was giving the speech and was like, there's been some rumors. We don't get along. Sniping in the press. It's not true. We get along as one. Meanwhile, I know that it took a month for them to
get together.
Get them to agree to appear on the same stage together.
And they killed each other in a recent article.
Yeah,
I read.
They hate each other.
Right.
And it was like, hey, we are one. It's like, really?
Yeah.
Why did it take us a month to get you on the same stage? So that was funny. I love the fact that John Lester comes back from cancer, comes back from lymphoma, comes back, not only pitches a no-hitter, but pitches the winning game in the 2007 World Series and loses the whatever SB that was named to the softball player got carried around the bases.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I hate the Red Sox with an all-consuming passion, but that is ridiculous.
And Lester was in, you know, they had a game, and they had the Angels game Friday night. He could have been there.
Yeah, he could have.
I mean, was it not a good enough cancer? Was lymphoma not, like, imposing enough to come back from? Maybe, like, if he'd come back from kidney cancer, he would win the ESPY?
But isn't it voted on by the fans or whatever? Who decides the ESPYs? I don't even understand that.
It's unclear.
Is it voted on by the fans?
They claim the fans decide it.
I mean, if it's decided by the fans, there's probably a fair amount of anti-Boston bias at this point.
I thought it was always decided by who would actually agree to show up.
Yeah,
but like, then Dana Kilpatrick was up for two ESPYs and didn't win either of them. And, you know, she was there and she presented. And
I think something tells me Danica's pretty available for media opportunities.
Well, her
think off camera Danica will be there.
Well, you know, she's actually in demand.
Really?
Yeah, like I think it was a decision for her to come. I think she's at a different place than she was 2 years ago.
You think so?
So I think she agrees on presenting at the ESPYs. Maybe she's thinking, oh, and by the way, you know, obviously I'll be taking home one.
Right.
So then she loses best female athlete to like some tennis player who wasn't even there. I don't know. A little slap in the face.
It's not good. She won't be at next year's.
She looked pretty good, by the way.
Yeah, she had a very, very short outfit on. I noticed that.
It's funny though. I actually get mad at the ESPYs as they're happening. Like, I remember the Pats didn't win some ESPYs a couple of years, and I was just like furious at the ceremony. But now, like looking back, I can't remember who's won a single ESPY, and I think that's a problem with the show.
Yeah,
It's fun as it's happening, but there's no historical, like nothing ever sustains itself past the time that you're actually watching the show.
I mean, I'm not going to be bouncing my grandkids on my knee talking about the time Brett Favre won greatest pseudo-retirement ESPY in 2008 or whatever award he won, you know?
Here's a rule of thumb. If you can tape your award show and not reveal the results for 4 days, and nobody really cares or wants to find out who the winners are, you need a little work with your award show.
Yeah, America wasn't really clamoring to see like who was going to be the best team or whatever,
Yeah, but on the other hand, The backbone of the show is solid. Like, it really is the one time all these guys get together, except for the baseball players. Like, almost every relevant NBA and NFL player was there.
Yeah, so, yeah, I'm sure it's fun parties and everything.
And the celebrities, like, in principle, it should work. But I think their big mistake is not just doing it live.
They should do that.
Because if you're live, stuff can happen.
The TV,
you don't know.
Yeah, people could say things or be drunk or whatever, sure. It can't be edited out.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I didn't see the live telecast because I only watched it. You know, I'm only good for one ESPYs per year. I can't watch it twice.
You were there live, right?
Yeah, I was there live. That was good enough. But Brendan Fraser came out and was just bizarre. Like, his hair was sticking up.
Yeah, his hair was odd.
And he was, like, indescribably goofy. Like, he was, the ESPY goes to. Like, you know, it was like he'd had a head injury. So I don't know if they edited that out or not, but if it had happened live, I think people would have been, like, astonished by
that. I just saw him laughing at the Will Ferrell, John C. Reilly video skit thing.
Yeah.
Where they're hosting it, and he was, like, he had this crazy hairdo. It looked really odd.
Yeah, he was, I would describe him as deranged.
The TV show, though, like, the big three of the Celtics, Garnett and Pierce, and even to some degree Allen, they showed more reaction shots of those guys than, like, Ed McMahon on The Tonight Show. Kevin Garnett, they showed him, like, laughing at everything.
Well, that's the fundamental problem with these shows, is that the basketball players, by nature, are by far the funniest athletes out of any sport.
Yeah.
Hockey players are just duds. I mean, they're fun to drink with, and they're fun. They'll drink with you until 4 in the morning, but they don't bring a ton to the table. Baseball players are just morons. And then the football players really have nothing interesting to say because they're so trained to not, you know, they just get all the originality beaten out of them. The NBA players are fantastic. They're like, funny.
So like, anyway, Odin participating in that piano thing.
Yeah, the NBA players are, you know, some of them are charismatic. They're unintentionally funny. Like, they're bringing everything to the table. So to have this show, and it was basically all football awards, like Brett Favre wins, Kevin Everett, the Giants won 4, and just these one terrible speech after another. So then at the end of the night, the Celtics finally win Best Team ESPY, and it was like the funniest part of the night. Like, the guys were funny, said funny things. So it makes me think they should just have an NBA awards.
All Make NBA it. Awards.
Yeah, ESPY's the All NBA edition, and then invite everybody. Or when the NBA announces their awards, maybe they do it after the season and they have an award show like the Oscars.
Yeah,
that could be interesting too.
Just the show, like, I see what you're saying.
Like, right, you know, right between the finals, the night before the draft. They give out the 2008 NBA awards. They hand out MVP, Rookie of the Year, Coach of the Year. I'm watching that. I'm watching the NBA awards.
Yeah, absolutely. I would tune into that.
You're not with me. It sounds like you got an email from work or something.
No. I'm with you. I'm sorry. I was momentarily distracted. I'm right here with you. I'm right here.
Did somebody go in the DL?
Don't send Steve Wilco after me. Don't make him throw my chair.
All right. So give us your baseball predictions for the rest of the year.
My predictions.
Yeah, give me
a scale of nervousness, but my predictions.
Well, I'm going to get to your scale of nervousousness. Who do you think will be the 4 AL playoff teams?
The Red Sox, the Rays, the Twins, and the Angels.
The Twins?
Yeah, how far? I don't even know. How far back are they from the White Sox?
Interesting.
A couple?
It's a big series for them with this Yankees series. They already got killed in the first game.
Yeah. But
I'm not
Darryl
totally sold
on
that. Yeah, that is.
Actually, you know what? I'm going to rescind that. I'll go with the White Sox because the Twins lineup is just, like, there were some guys in there I never heard of before last night in that game. So I rescind that. I'll go White Sox. I think the Rays will win the East. The Red Sox will be the wild card, and the Angels will win the West. And the Red Sox are going to probably go to the World Series.
Oh, now you're reverse jinxing.
No, I'm not. I wish I was making it up, but I'm not.
I screwed up the timeline of these questions because I forgot to ask you about Favre before we got back to baseball.
About Brett Favre?
Yeah, because that whole story was breaking as we were in Las Vegas and was really the dominant story of that whole weekend, and we're arguing about it and, like, who's bigger in Wisconsin, Brett Favre or the Packers. Like, because we were there. You went with me when I did the Lambeau Field Comp 2 years ago.
Yes.
And we all decided that Brett Favre was bigger than the Packers.
Yeah.
If all the Wisconsin people were given a choice, Brett Favre or the Packers, they would go with Favre.
Absolutely.
And now that's not totally happening.
Every person in the stadium, 70,000 people or whatever it holds, every single one of them had a Favre jersey on.
Yeah, because normally you go to a football game and there will be the leader, like with the Pats, it's Brady. But then you'll have all the other people wearing, like, the Maroney jersey, the Seymour jersey, whatever.
Yeah, Moss. You'd have a lot of jerseys
Moss.
There, you know?
You have, like, whoever, like, the coolest black guy is on the team, that guy will have a ton of jerseys.
I mean, obviously the quarterback is always the most popular player, but, I mean, out there...
This was ridiculous.
Like, it was... I mean, he was the Messiah. It was a joke. Except
it was
for three
everybody
guys that were like hedging their bets with AJ Hawk jerseys, trying to get on that train early. But
there were a couple AJ Hawk jerseys.
But everybody, literally everyone else in the stadium, had on a Brett Favre jersey. So we joked at the time, we're like, what's going to happen when he retires? Like, what's the state going to do?
Yeah, we thought it would shut down.
And our buddy Chip Kane, who's on the ground out there, as it were, and he was like, yeah, I don't know what's going to happen. You can't think of like a post Favre era. So I'm sure there was a grieving process and a mourning process, and now it's like the guy wants to come back and play. It's kind of like a loved one coming back from the dead. And yet, they apparently, you know, according to all reports, like they're like, no, we've moved on. We don't want you to come back from the dead. We're all about Aaron Rodgers now.
And what's funny is as you pointed out, our friend Chip was the most wishy-washy friend we had. Like, you know, you could – even if he didn't want to do something, you could talk him into it, and he would say stuff like, yeah, his roommate his freshman year would lock him out to hook up with his girlfriend, and we'd always see Chip sitting outside the door waiting to get let in with his books, and he'd be like, I want to tell him to screw off, but I can't.
Exactly.
And now Brett Favre has become an extension of Chip. He wants to retire, and he can't. I want to retire, but I can't.
Exactly.
Which I thought was an excellent point by you.
And not only did he retire, but then 2 months later he was going to come back, and they were all set to fly down and have him sign on the dotted line or whatever. And then he's like, "Nah, never mind. I don't. I'm going to stay retired."
Right. It was like when we would talk Chip into some trip, and then he would back out at the last minute.
Exactly.
I want to go, but I can't.
Right.
So, do you think everybody in Wisconsin's like that? Like, it's just a whole state of indecisive people who can't make up their mind.
It could be, and that's hard because there's so many different kinds of beer and cheese out there. You'd have to make some choices at certain times, you know?
Maybe everybody's so stuffed from all the eating and drinking that it just they're not capable of making decisions.
All the beer and cheese and brats, you just can't even function. Yeah.
I want to be – if I ever commit a murder, I want it to be in Wisconsin. The jury is deliberating for their 78th day.
I mean, I want to vote guilty, but he could be not guilty.
But I do have some reasonable doubt.
Right.
But then I do think he killed him. Just go back and forth.
Yes.
The one thing that did shock me, and this was, you know, I'm taking the summer off to write a book, and I knew there would be a couple instances where I would have loved to have written a column, and I've made a decision. All the typing I'm going to do is for this book, and I throw myself into it. But this whole Favre thing, you know, like if this had happened with Larry Bird in 1992 in Boston, because I think Bird was on the same level that Favre
is probably,
in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Like, just we all deified the guy. The guy could have killed somebody. We would have made excuses for him. Like, if he had retired and then decided to come back the next year, and the Celtics were like, "Look, man, we've moved on. We signed Xavier McDaniel," there would have been a riot.
Yeah, there would have been.
It would have been 100% with Bird. And if the Celtics were doing the thing like, well, you know, you change your mind a couple times and we just can't count on you after that. We would have been like, well, screw you. How about this? You quit and we'll take Larry Bird.
Exactly. How about
if that's
that?
And that's what surprises me with this Packers thing is there does seem to be, I don't know how big of a percentage it is, but of people who are like, yeah, you know, it's time for the Aaron Rodgers era. And
yeah.
This guy's been stringing us along. It's like, he's Brett Favre.
He is, exactly.
So I'm shocked by that.
It's amazing to me. And I can't wait till Aaron Rodgers is the second coming of Ryan Leaf or something. That'll be so funny if he's awful now.
Well, he has so much pressure on him.
Oh,
you think if anyone's going to fold, no matter how good you are, this is the circumstance.
It's unbelievable. But I think Favre, I mean, what are they going to do? They can't release. They're not just going to outright release him. And I don't think they can trade him. I think they're going to be like, Brett, thanks for the memories. So many years. Good luck in Mississippi.
Frank Gifford.
Yeah, exactly.
So many years, Brett Favre.
Favre.
So many memories.
Right. I mean, I just don't see. It's not going to have a happy resolution for anybody.
I think they're going to trade him the AFC to a team that's not on their schedule. That's my prediction. I think, like, the Jets or the Chiefs, somebody like that.
The Chiefs would be so perfect. It's just like it's like where old quarterbacks go to die, like Montana and now Favre. It'd be so perfect, you know?
Yeah. I always had that joke in columns about the throwback jerseys that you'd never want, like the Joe Montana Chiefs jersey or the O.J. Simpson Rams or Niners jersey or whatever jersey Favre ends up with will definitely be on that list. It hasn't even been decided yet.
Right, right. Like Unitas, the San Diego Chargers Unitas jersey, or like the Rams Namath jersey. Like,
right.
There should be like a Hall of Fame of all those quarterbacks with their jerseys.
Or at least a website. There should be a website that has pictures of each of those jerseys, and you get depressed.
The guy just looking bummed out on the sidelines, like, I hate this team, I hate this city.
And there's been a ton of them, like even like Dave Callens, his 1982 Milwaukee Bucks jersey. Nobody remembers he played for the Bucks.
Or Willie Mays on the Mets.
Right.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Somebody should start that website.
Hey, at the ESPYs last week, I was hanging out with Connor Schell, who works for ESPN's content development, does like a lot of our documentaries and stuff. Really smart guy, really good opinions on things. I always respected his opinion. He said he didn't like the podcast when I had my friends on.
Really?
That's his take, yeah.
Wow, said, I'm a little hurt.
Just said he skipped him.
That hits me right in the gut there. That hurts.
It hurt me too. Has he not seen
the wild response from America, the overwhelming, the glee that people greet the podcast with?
I said, look, the guy's had his own song written about him. You can't tell me this isn't working.
They wrote songs about me.
And he's like, look, I love the James Blake one. When you have your friends on, I just am not interested.
Wow.
I don't care what your friends have to say.
Well, I hate ESPN's documentaries, so take that.
I hated Black Magic. You hear me?
I have literally tens of emails I could show to him of people that just love my work.
At least 40.
And, of course, a lot of those are from my family, but still.
Well, you know what? I took it as a direct challenge that we have to step it up for
step
the
up
last
our game. All right.
Yeah, the last part of the baseball season. We got to step it up.
All right.
Connor doesn't think I should have my friends on.
Wow. I'm flabbergasted. I might have to go home right now and just go under my covers. I'm a little hurt.
The funniest thing is if I called Connor to be on a podcast, he would do it in a heartbeat.
Of course.
And then get upset when I cut it short after like 35 minutes. So anyway, we're going to step up our game over these last 2.5 months. And I do think the AL East thing is going to be very interesting.
Yeah.
One of the more interesting. When's the last time we had a 3-man race?
What's that? What if it was a 3-man race?
A 3-team race. When was the last time that's happened?
I don't know. Well, the National League, it's like the National League East and the AL East could both be the same way. Phillies.
No, but I'm saying the AL East, when's the last time 3 teams have been in the mix in September?
No, it's been a while. It's been 2-team race, but not 3.
Even when the Orioles were kind of decent in the mid-90s, the Red Sox weren't.
Yeah, it was Orioles, Yankees, yeah.
So that'll be kind of fun.
That'll be interesting. See if the Rays have it in them to hang in there. It'll be good. It's a good final end of the season here.
I'm going to say no.
Yeah, let's hope not. I don't know. We'll see.
Oh, one more question. What would you do for the – what is your – you know, anybody who watches sports – has to have a solution for how to prevent that 15-inning All-Star game from ever happening again. From the scenario of Scott Kazmir, who threw 107 pitches on Sunday, coming in on a Tuesday. What is your solution to stem
that? Well, first of all, I don't think that every team should have to be represented. Like, this notion that, I'm only going to tune in because I'm a Kansas City Royals fan and Soria, or whatever his name is, was like the representative for the Royals. Now I can like go to sleep happy. I think you should just have the best players, pure and simple. Now the fans get to vote on the starters, fine, and then it should just be the best players. You shouldn't have to have everybody from every team.
I disagree with you because there was one year when I was a kid when the Red Sox only had one All-Star, and it was either Yaz or Jim Rice, and I remember being just excited that we had one guy. So if you're a kid and your team doesn't have an All-Star, you feel like you failed.
You gotta think of the kids, John. The Mariners don't deserve to have an All-Star. They're awful.
Yeah, they probably don't.
I mean, voted in, I guess. But yeah. I mean, teams like the Royals don't deserve to have an All-Star. They just don't. The Pittsburgh Pirates don't deserve to have an All-Star. I'm sorry. But, I mean, in terms of, like, what do you do to make sure it doesn't go to 15 innings and it's tied, I mean, every sports fan has to have an answer, and I'm going to disappoint you because, I don't know, you can't blow out some guy's arm and have him pitch, like, 5 innings as a starter like it was a real game.
I have an answer.
Okay.
And it's an easy one. And
you end
forgive
it with,
me.
A home run derby, like a penalty shootout thing?
No, forgive me if this has been mentioned. And you know, I haven't really been on the internet in the last month because I've been working on this book. So if somebody has said this before me,
you've been working on your biography of Miley Cyrus. It's
right.
A book that has to be written. Right.
I swear on my kid's life that this was my idea. And if somebody else came independently of me, so be it. They should pick the 5 best rookies in each league and they would just be the emergency guys for like after the 12th inning. And
if pitchers guys, or any, or what, any position?
Three pitchers. Well, actually, they make it 3 pitchers and like 1 position player. So you get 4 for each thing. And then those guys cannot be used until after the 12th inning. So you have these guys that will just be happy to be there. They get a free trip. They get to hang out with guys, their heroes. And if they don't play, they're not going to be upset. But then we have these this emergency contingency if we ever run out of pitchers. Like, for instance, who's a rookie pitcher in the AL? I'm trying to think.
Well,
there really aren't that many, I guess.
Like Buchholz or somebody?
Yeah, is Buchholz technically a rookie?
I don't know. Well,
he,
no,
yeah, he is. Yeah, no, he is a rookie because he pitched less than 50 innings last year.
Okay.
So Buchholz. So you get three Buchholz types. And I'm sure there's like a rookie reliever, like that guy Ziegler on Oakland, guys like that. So you get three of those guys on each team and those become your emergency pitchers. Those guys are going to be so terrified when they come into the game, they'll give up runs anyway.
Right, it'll be
so
over
that's,
quick.
Yeah, that solves our problem.
Not a bad idea.
Thank you. All right, let's wrap this up. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how worried are you this week?
If we're not making the playoffs, I'll say 6.5. I'm hopeful still. It's a little hope.
Does Hank Steinbrenner have one panic trade in him?
Does Hank Steinbrenner have one panic trade in him?
Yeah.
Let's hope so. I would like him to go out and get a big bat, but I don't want that bat to be Barry Bonds.
Wow.
No, and no way, shape, or form. No.
They wouldn't sully the last 3 months of Yankee Stadium with the likes of Barry Bonds.
Let's hope not.
Or Clemens.
Oh, God. Don't even joke about that. They don't need a pitcher.
What if they brought back Bonds and Roger Clemens?
I'd be out. I'd be done.
You would quit the team.
Well, I'd be – no, I could never do that, but I'd be really bummed out.
See, I think if you bring back one, you got to do both to deflect the attention from each other.
For the price of one, my God.
Yeah, because if it's just one of them, the guy would be covered like a serial killer almost. It'd be like Son of Sam. But if it's two of them, they split the attention in half, and I think it would work.
I know that Cold Pizza would have to wheel in Skip Bayless like Hannibal Lecter.
I love that Hannibal Lecter joke. We've been making that joke for like 15 years.
Yeah, it always works.
All right, I'm going to let you go.
And
I hope Connor Schell enjoyed this podcast.
Let's hope so.
What a jerk he is.
This is for you, Connor.
All right, talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Target to sign off.
Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.